and welcome to The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I am Phil Rude. I'm the dad.
And I'm Austin Rude. I'm the son. Every week we watch a movie and then we talk about it. Except this week. We don't.
We talk about a lot of movies.
Right.
Before we get into that, I want to offer an apology to our faithful listeners. We've been MIA for a couple of weeks. Life has happened. Austin, you started a new job.
I did.
Back to school.
And immediately got sick.
And you got sick. I got sick. We had the Thanksgiving holiday. We have the Christmas and New Year's holiday coming up, which is a busy work time for me. So we decided to just sort of mark this as the end of season one. Take a small hiatus, and then we will be back in January to start season two.
Yeah. I think everyone's kind of busy at the end of the year anyway.
Yeah. It's a busy time. I know a lot of podcasts take holiday seasons off. It just was, we kind of lost our momentum a few weeks ago, and we knew we were going to take the holidays off anyway. It seemed weird to come back, do like two episodes, and then call it a season. So
we kind of just took our break a little sooner than we had expected.
Than we had anticipated, yeah. We burned through our buffer. We were so proud right. of having a buffer and,
But we did 20 episodes this year.
We did do 20
That's a
episodes.
Lot. Started in July. I was surprised when I saw that.
We almost kind of spur of the moment started this podcast, and we ran 20 episodes. I don't know that we missed a week since we started. So,
yeah.
Cheers to us for doing that.
Hadn't we talked about doing something for like a while before that, though? It was just kind of like,
yeah.
Oh, finally, we've watched Fight Club. Now we have something to talk about.
It really was kind of that. I had wanted to do another podcast since Brokeback Mountain ended.
The
band broke up. I still podcast with David on occasion, so yeah, that's good. But to have a regular show and a reason to watch, I enjoy doing movie podcasts because it makes me watch a movie every week, which is something I don't always give myself time to do.
You need to be assigned homework to watch something?
Kind of. I enjoy watching movies, but I don't always give myself time to sit down and pay attention to a movie. You know what I mean? Like, we give ourselves busy work all the time or waste time with things, and then the things that we actually enjoy sort of fall by the wayside, and movies have kind of become that for me. So I do enjoy doing this every week and making sure that I'm watching a movie every week.
Yeah, I think that's...
It's kind of got me back in the swing of doing that on my own. Like, I'm watching things that I enjoy and things I've been meaning to see. So it's really been cool.
I think for me, it's kind of the same thing. Like, I watch TV shows instead of movies.
Right.
I can commit myself to a 40-minute episode and then do that three times, but to watch a two-hour movie is like, what?
Well, you know, you can give yourself 40 or 45 minutes, whatever. You don't know that you can give yourself 2 hours. And then when you get to the end of the first one, you're like, yeah, I can do 45.
Right.
Yeah, like sort of do it in
or I can watch 800 TikToks in a day. Yes.
Yeah, we can all scroll through Twitter 1,000 times. But
right.
On that note, in the past few weeks, what have you been watching? Have you been watching... Have you seen any movies or started new TV shows or anything?
I've been keeping up with Mandalorian. I'm really liking this season. Someone in the room hasn't watched it.
I wait for it to all be there, and then I go through and watch at my own pace.
I get it. I actually have fallen into, like, new episodes release on Friday, and it's, like, I work now, so I work all week, and then Friday I get home.
Someone's a grown
I get
up.
To relax. Yeah. I know.
Well, that's so cute.
And then I'm in bed by like 9 o'clock, like a human being,
like a person. Yes.
One thing I have been doing recently is I got back into my Nintendo Switch.
Oh yeah,
You know, I've had it for like close to 2 years. But, like, I go through, like, I'll use it for a month or so, and then I'll forget about it. But I got some more games for it, and yeah. I think I'm going to stick with it.
Doing more gaming.
Right.
Right. Cool.
I'm bad at gaming, so, like, I hope I get better.
Well, I mean, as long as you are... I mean, now that... You used to be bad at gaming and nobody cared, and now that everything we do is, like, for the public, you know, people go on Twitch and they, you know, everybody feels like this pressure to be good at gaming.
Right.
And I just think, like, no, embrace being bad at gaming and just play because you like to play. Like, that's...
Right.
I have an old school gaming mentality where it's like, I have no desire to play games on Twitch because I'm terrible at playing games.
Mm-hmm.
But when I play something, I just want to play it just for the enjoyment in that moment. I think that's super healthy.
My brother is a professional gamer.
It's true.
He plays on Twitch, so, like, I don't want to lose that Cuphead a billion times while he's watching. Yeah. The game has bruised my ego enough.
Talking trash to you constantly. But
it's fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. What about you?
I finished my Breaking Bad rewatch.
That was fast.
All the way through, and I rewatched El Camino. I am going to rewatch Better Call Saul next, and get caught up to where they are. Whatever's on Netflix is what I've seen through.
Okay.
Started Fargo season 4. Fargo's a great TV show as well.
You started at season 4?
No, I just started season 4. I've seen the other 3 seasons. And I think that's another one I was waiting for it to get done, and then
I thought that's been off the air for a while.
The newest season just aired a couple months ago. I think it just wrapped not long ago. But yeah, I'm enjoying that. Chris Rock is surprisingly great in it. Like, you know, who knew?
Not me.
No, I think Chris Rock's a fine actor, but I really didn't. There's some weight to his role on Fargo. I mean, he's really good in it.
I don't even know what he's done. So, like,
Chris Rock's a comedian. He was on SNL for a long time, in the 90s. I'm trying to think what the biggest thing Chris Rock, and then he just, like, will show up in movies. I think he had a HBO series for a little while, like a talk show kind of thing.
Right. I mean, everyone has a talk show now.
Sure. But this was, you know, before, not like daytime talk, more like what Dennis Miller used to do, a little along the lines of Bill Maher, except funny. but less political, I think. Just, I don't know, Chris Rock's a funny guy, and it's cool to see him do something a little more dramatic, where he's like a old school gangster.
Cool.
And then I've watched a couple of fun documentaries. I watched something on HBO Max called Action Park about a largely unregulated theme park in New Jersey where people were hurt and maimed and even killed, essentially run by teenagers. Very interesting.
I wish I could have been there.
I'm glad none of us were. it sounds insanely dangerous. And then I watched one on Netflix last night. It's called Iron Fists and Kung Fu Kicks. And it is about the history of Hong Kong martial arts cinema. And
I bet that's interesting.
It's insanely interesting. It is so crazy to see what that influenced and see the ripple effect of these, a lot of times very cheaply made, very run and gun kind of movies, the cultural impact of them on African American cinema and African American communities as a whole in the 70s,
right?
How it influenced future filmmakers, and it gave me some ideas of things I'm going to bring to the table in season 2.
Well, that's kind of like all genres affect each other,
sure.
But I feel like we forget about kung fu movies a lot in America.
It is it's a very niche thing, but it's really interesting to see how things that did make it over here, like when Bruce Lee hit, like people were like, "Whoa, this is insane!" And I didn't realize Bruce Lee was never very famous while he was alive, like mainstream famous.
Actually,
his biggest mainstream success came after, like, he made Enter the Dragon and was making other movies, and before it actually released in America, he died. And he never really knew how big of a star he was. So it's really...
Oh, wow.
I had no idea that...
Was he a star in China?
He was...
Or Hong Kong?
He had a career in Hong Kong. He had a career, I think, in the States. It was all very low level. He didn't blow up huge until Enter the Dragon.
Okay.
And then by that time, it was like, oh, whoa. You know, then it was like,
oh. And then we can go back and look at all
dig out
these...
all this old stuff and send it over to you.
Right.
You know, it was very, very interesting to see how they handled Bruce Lee's career and Jackie Chan and all of these other things. It's a really, I love a documentary about pop culture and about sort of fun things. You know, I like a good political or social documentary. But I also really enjoy something with, like, no stakes to it that is just about art or culture or pop culture, you know, something.
It's interesting to analyze how things become popular or just, like, the timeline, their life.
Yeah, exactly. And this being a very specific film industry. Hong Kong, you know, it's
right.
It's not.
It's separate from Hollywood.
It's separate from the Japanese samurai movies. And it was like very culturally relevant. It's a really solid documentary. I recommend to anybody who's interested in that. And we are going to watch some Hong Kong movies coming up.
I will prepare myself.
Two. It's there's some really great stuff that I've seen. But I'm not super well versed in it either, so made me want to kind of dive deeper into some of that stuff.
Coming soon, our Hong Kong only podcast. We will be learning Mandarin.
We could do a foreign cinema month.
Oh, that would be fun.
That would be cool, and we've had some suggestions from people of things we should take a look at. But yeah, that's what we've been up to in the couple weeks since we've talked to you. But, what I want to do with this episode is talk about what we watched this season.
You right.
Know?
Say clip show of sorts.
Kind of. Remember the time.
That's all like do that fading thing.
The wavy.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, we can. I want to talk about movies that stood out to us. What did we like? What did we not like? What did you know? What were we introduced to? You were introduced to a lot.
I was. I counted it up last night. 15 out of 20 movies, or 20 episodes. A few of those were TV. But yeah, 15 all new.
Yeah, that's good. Do you feel? Do you feel like that was a good thing, or do you wish there had been more on the table that you were familiar with that you were...
No, that is a good thing. Like, I will say, sometimes it takes me a few watchings of a movie for it to... I'm a bit of a slow thinker, polite way of saying it. But yeah, that was kind of my goal with this, was... to watch new movies.
Sort of
and
first
so
impressions kind of thing.
Right. And our thing of going back and forth worked out so that you're picking movies that you like, which most of them I haven't seen. And then I'm also picking new movies over here and occasionally ones that I have seen or want to see.
See, you took a bit of a different approach to it, where I was bringing movies that I liked and I wanted to talk about. And in some cases I wanted to show you, whereas you were saying, I've been wanting to watch this movie, and so I'm going, and I did that in a couple instances too, I think. I only had, I think, five, and that counts like Korra.
Right.
I think five things that were new to me. So I really admire your approach of using this as like, I'm going to bring something... Maybe I won't like this, you know, whereas I was bringing something
Sometimes.
I was kind of championing something that I was bringing to the table. And I really like that you did that, because one of the things I have liked is about this is that you brought some movies that I wouldn't have watched otherwise. And it did kind of expose me to some things.
Well, part of that, it's kind of a challenge for me to find things that I like and have seen a bunch that you haven't, because like 90% of my movie watching experiences have been you showing me something.
I don't know that I've shown you 90% of the movies you've seen.
It's an exaggeration, but, yeah.
Yeah. You and I have always, I mean, behind the curtain, I don't know. I don't remember how much we've talked about this, but like, you and I have always kind of talked about movies of my three kids. I think you are the one who sort of locked into movies and talking about movies the most, you know. And
this podcast is just an extension of what we already do.
Right. It was really basically turning on a mic and putting some kind of format to this. But I remember when you got into Doctor Who, like, I remember a specific, like, Sunday afternoon, you and I were running errands, and I don't think you stopped talking about your analysis of a season of Doctor Who for the entire 4 hours that we were out. And I'm not talking about you did it in an annoying little kid way. It was like you were really breaking things down in an impressive way that kept me interested, even though I didn't watch Doctor Who and I wasn't following everything you were talking about.
So I remember a specific period in middle school where something clicked inside my brain. Where you ran through our entire
family data plan because you were watching Doctor Who on the bus every day.
You don't have to call me out in front of the podcast listeners. But yes, there's something about TV that I like. It's like a familiar format, like the 3x structure, the 40 minutes, I just really like it. And then, so there are certain things I've connected with, and that really sucked me into media.
Yeah.
And movies are an extension of that, but also they're kind of like second place to TV shows.
Well, the TV, you've kind of come up in the time where TV, a season of TV is like a long form story. So I think you appreciate like the long form
series arcs
of it, you know, like a serialized kind of fiction as opposed to a 2 hour chunk. You're going to, I mean, you are more into the MCU than I am because it's a long, stretched out, overarching story. Whereas I like to pick and choose the individual chapters of that long MCU universe.
Which is coming from reading comics and sort of picking out individual stories you like.
In the era of comics that I discovered comics in when I was a kid, when it was 2, 3, 4 episode or issue arcs. And things were a little more bite-sized, I think, and less dependent on every other thing. You know, big comic events weren't happening.
It's kind of cool how different mediums affect each other in that way, how they adapt, like, oh, we can do long series TV show-like things in comics now and stuff like that.
As opposed to taking, and this still happens too, like a graphic novel is more like a movie. Like a standalone graphic novel is more like a movie, whereas like a comic event is like a TV show that, you know, like the big, you know, like Marvel will do an event that goes through all their books, you know, and it's just sort of like, oh yeah, everything that was going on in your book, put it on hold for 6 months. We're doing this thing now.
Stop what you're doing for a month. Like, and as the list, as the reader, like, you have to stop everything.
Yes, everybody read hates each it, of these in order. I think we're way off the beaten path. I'm not sure where we came from anymore.
That's kind of really the theme of every episode this year.
Yeah, but let's start at the beginning of our list of topics here. And what was new to you that stood out? What was a big, it doesn't have to be necessarily your favorite, but like, what was a new film to you that really is a standout that you're like, I'm really glad I watched this for the first time?
That's tough. I think, because the answer is...
You can
is,
pick two or three. It's not, right. It's not a definitive
thing. Well, the answer is also what my favorite movie was, which is V for Vendetta. I have watched it three times
since we watched it. I wondered if you were gonna, watched it. I remember, I know you really liked it, and I was wondering if...
I did.
If it was one of the... If it was going to make your list.
2020, the movie.
Yikes.
No, yeah, let's not. But yeah, it's... I don't know. Something about it really works. And I found myself going back to it, and V is such an interesting character. I tried to memorize, like, his introduction thing. Like, yeah,
whoa. That'll just trip you up on the pronunciations across it.
Right. Yeah. I'll get it down one day. But yeah, V, and then also, what's her name? Eve?
Evie.
Yeah. She's also an interesting character, and how they play against each other, and the message of a revolution and hope, and
for sure, yeah,
how things change.
I think that's a great pick. I've read the graphic novel now,
right,
which is very difficult. It's very different in some ways. It's a lot darker. I think it's a great adaptation of sort of difficult to adapt material. You know what I mean? Of course, Alan Moore hates it because Alan Moore hates adaptations of his work. But seeing how difficult that is to take it note for note, I think they did, the changes that they made to it were really good. There's still some super dark stuff in there about, like, pretending to be a child so that a priest will be sexually attracted to her. Right. It's super gross, but the payoff to it is so good. That's a great pick, honestly. I'm so glad that you liked V for Vendetta. And that was another one. You were like, I haven't seen this. I've always wanted to. And it's so great to see that it got its hooks in you for all of the best reasons. You know, like, that movie was sold largely on the Wachowskis. And, oh, look, cool. It's like The Matrix. But it's like, oh, no, this...
Nothing like it.
This movie is so good on its own. And the end of it is just such a great payoff. I'm glad that you were not disappointed in that movie.
Yeah, it's like, honestly, in my top 10 movies, like,
wow,
forever now.
That is high praise.
It is. It's not the only one too. We can talk about that more later, though.
Do you have another one you wanna mention, or do you want me to?
I want to hear what your favorite, or the one that. What's the question we're asking?
A standout movie that was new,
right,
to me.
Yeah.
Easily for me, it was Emma. It was a movie that I, like I said, I never would have watched that. I never would have watched a Jane Austen movie, and I never would have thought that a Jane Austen movie would put its hooks in me like it did. I know. I mean, I read Wikipedia articles about Emma following our episode. I do realize I made some mistakes in talking about that movie. It's not Victorian era England. It's
who cares?
I don't know exactly.
To the historians watching our podcast,
it is a different era of the UK, and you know, I got some character names wrong, and there's some confusing things because I just wasn't familiar with it. But I really found Emma to be a super charming movie. Anya Taylor-Joy, who's now everybody is raving about her in Queen's Gambit.
Right? She's so good in it.
But it's like, I love that we watched two movies with her, and I love both of those movies. Like, she's great in Emma. She's great in The Witch. And I am going to watch Queen's Gambit.
We should do an episode on it, honestly.
On Queen's Gambit?
Yeah. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah. We can, let's put a pin in that.
It's a time-consuming thing, I know.
I need to see if I can get it watched over the holidays, and maybe we can do at least maybe like a special episode out of, like an extra kind of thing or something.
New Year's special.
Yeah, something like that. But no, I really enjoyed Emma, and I really did not expect to at all. So it was really cool that you brought something to me that I otherwise wouldn't have watched. I really wanted there were movies that were also new to me that I really had high expectations for. I wanted to put like The Hunt on this list because I think I'm like you in that the more I think about something or rewatch it, I get more out of it. The Hunt is sort of one of those things that is still in my brain. I'm still thinking about it. I'm still breaking it down. I think it's an infinitely interesting movie that looks at politics in a interesting way that we don't talk about very much, which is right. like a class system. But there's something, it just doesn't execute as well as I wanted it.
Right, that's my thing is, sure. it's still, I've grown more fond of movie, it. Right, it's like, the reason, one of the questions we're going to answer later is, what is your least favorite movie? And I was considering it, but then I was like, no, because it gave us something really interesting to talk about.
I think we had a... I think our conversation about it, and this is something totally different, there's movies we like or didn't like, that like there are movies that I think we sort of struggled with the conversation about them. And I think The Hunt is one of those.
Right.
Where I think we ended up arguing about a lot of things and neither of us having quite the vocabulary or articulating things very well. But I really did like The Hunt. It just, it's a clumsy movie at certain points that kept me from scoring it that high. Whereas I think Emma is just a gorgeous movie, beginning to end. And just such a charming little HBO film, you know, that I really, it really blindsided me. And I'm glad, again, you know, thank you for bringing that to my attention and having me watch it.
Honestly, next season, I'm going to try to do that more. There are a few things that I don't think you've seen, or that...
There's a lot of things I haven't seen.
You're gonna be opposed to this, but you don't like musicals, and I'm gonna try to find one that I think you'll like.
I have watched musicals. I've seen musical theater. I've been to productions, not just that you were in, like... You know,
you've seen other people in musicals.
I didn't enjoy it. I thought of Avenue Q the whole time.
Thank you.
I'm. That's what we do here. I mean, that's the assignment is bring whatever you want to the table. Like,
Shrek the Halls.
I guess if you want to hear me rant and rave about, I mean,
no.
But like, I do like that we do this, and we're not like. Oh, I'm going to find the thing he hates the most. You know what I mean? Like
that just wouldn't be fun.
No, David and I used to talk about this on Brokeback Mountain all the time. Like, I don't want to become a bad movie podcast. There are a ton of bad movie podcasts. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, we watch a bad movie and talk about it. But it's like, yeah, already, like, how did this get made exist? Mm-hmm. All of these other things, you know, and it's just sort of like, I want to watch movies that we want to celebrate.
Right.
You know,
how many imitation Mystery Science Theater 3000
exactly.
shows can there be?
You know, there's something that people like ironically. Sure, I get that. Every once in a while, let's watch a stinker and talk about, you know.
Yeah.
But like... Yeah, like, there's no joy for me in wanting to trip somebody up and make them watch a real terrible movie. But
yeah, as, like, a friend thing, like, I could see watching, like, Sharknado with your friends, right. but...
Right.
Like, there's nothing of substance to talk about, and that's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
What was your favorite movie? I mean, is it... I mean, V for Vendetta, you already said. But did you have another one that you would just... It doesn't have to be, like... Something you saw for the first time, but just in general, like...
I came up with the top three, and they are actually all things that I watched for the first time on the podcast.
Cool.
So, V for Vendetta, number one.
Great.
Amazing movie. These two are very close, but number two, we have 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
It's grown on me. The ending is still a mindfuck, but...
Hey, you know, it will always be a mindfuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
And number three is Ex Machina.
Great movies.
It is. Yeah.
On the 2001, I'm gonna side promote or cross promote. TV's Travis on Twitch, and he has a podcast called Wait, You Haven't Seen, where they introduce a movie to somebody every week. It's he does it live on Twitch, but it's also in your podcatcher. And they did 2001 just last week.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and that movie split the room out of four of them. Two of them hated it. Two of them really liked it or were indifferent about it. It's a very divisive movie, I think. It's really cool to me that it, even though you don't quite grasp it, which I would argue nobody really does.
Which I would argue is a flaw of it.
I don't think that's an argument at all. I think that is a big flaw of it as a film, but as a piece of art.
Space imagery, you have me.
I'm glad that you liked it, because that is a tough movie to suffer through if you're not enjoying it.
Right. I heard someone say it's Stanley Kubrick's worst movie. Hmm. It was in like a hot takes thing.
Ooh, that does sound like a hashtag hot take. Yeah,
I was like, oh.
I guess everybody probably has like their Kubrick top five too. You know what I mean? If you really want to dive deep on
I would have Kubrick. To see five of his movies to.
I've probably seen his five most mainstream movies, so I'm not like an authority on him.
Yeah,
but Ex Machina, a great movie.
I such a thinker. Yeah. It's like a real concept movie, kind of like Arrival. Which is another one of my like top 10 all time.
Great sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They really make you think, and that's, and they do it in a way that's also like fun sci-fi. So,
I don't know if fun, but interesting. Cool, yeah.
Right.
Are you looking forward to Dune? To the new Dune from the director of, Arrival?
I am. But, you know, I have to get through that giant phone book of a book.
Yeah, I'm gonna pitch this to you. This is a philosophy J.F. Dubow explained to me a couple years ago, was watch the movie first and then read the book. And then the book is like extended universe. You get the story from the movie and then you get the story plus all the side quests from the book that didn't make it into the movie. That's what I'm doing. I'm reading the Game of Thrones novels right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so much more expansive. But it's like, I'm not faulting the TV show. They could never fit all this in one story. But I'm enjoying knowing what's going on because I saw the show and getting to just sort of live in the world that's being built.
Right. My one flaw with that is I like picturing things in the book my own way. I want to direct Dune myself.
Hey, that's fair.
And then I get to see someone else's interpretation. I'm not someone who's like, oh, you changed something, I hate it forever. Like, I want to see what happens in the book before the movie.
I've read books that I never saw the movie to because the imagery in my head I enjoyed so much.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas movie. And I love Terry Gilliam and I love Hunter S. Thompson, but that book painted such a picture in my head that I was like, nope, that's my version of it. And if I see the movie, it might replace one of the visions in my brain with the movie vision that I, you know, just by default. So
I read the Hunger Games series after watching the movies. And so I always feel a bit disappointed that the only Katniss that I can picture is Jennifer Lawrence. Even though I like those movies, I kind of want to know, like, just reading her description alone, like, what would my mind have come up with?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think that's a fair way to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
But I am looking forward to Dune because I really don't think I have time to sit down. And I've always wanted to read that book. And then I look at it and I'm go, good Lord, that's a huge book.
It's on my shelf. Yeah, I know. It's big and it's small font. I have.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe I'll do the audiobook.
Oh, that's an idea.
But
what about you?
I am gonna echo your 2001 sentiment because I think
copying.
I'm really glad to because I have no original thoughts. I am glad that we visited that movie or revisited that movie, And I think we had a great conversation following it that really only scratched the surface of what that movie's about.
Right.
But I'm also going to go with another sci-fi movie, which was The Vast of Night, which is, I think, just sort of one of the low-key great sci-fi movies in the last couple of years. We watched it for the show, and I had seen it not long before then. I just think that's such a solid movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had a really cool discussion on that one, too.
Right. I, like, from premise to execution to aesthetic, that movie is just great.
Yeah, there's the mystery of it all, the tone, the atmosphere of everything.
It's one of those things. I was, like, really struggling, like, with what is my favorite, because I liked so many of the movies we saw. Very few of them I was like, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's, and also, just to note, we're not including Avatar or Korra in our picks.
Right. I feel like it's a separate ball game with those.
A little bit, yeah, because it's a different format. It's, especially, you know, we have two Korra episodes where, you know, we broke down each season, and it's just sort of like,
we also haven't finished reviewing that show. And
right. So, yeah, we're just talking about the movies. But those two and I'm going to, I guess they're all my picks, but The Witch. I love The Witch. I think it's such a great movie.
That whole Halloween.
It was fun, right?
It was so fun.
Yeah.
Every movie I hadn't seen, and I liked them all.
They were all new to you. That's right. Yeah. But I think we had great picks across the board with that. And
I will say, Ready or Not, it was a fun movie to watch. I feel like we didn't have a lot to say about it.
Yeah. That was one that we liked the movie, but the conversation I feel like was a little lacking just for the surface level movie that it was.
I liked the movie. I liked it too. End of discussion.
We were coming off of Midsommar and The Witch and Get Out, these really dense.
Maybe we should have started with that.
Thematic. Yeah, maybe we should have just watched The Shining. But those are my, I guess, top three. I'd have trouble. I mean, again, like Ex Machina, of course. Great movie.
Yeah.
True Grit. Logan Lucky. Like, we watched some great movies this year, man.
Honestly, True Grit doesn't hit me as hard.
I'm a Western guy.
I was thinking, actually, recently.
Yeah.
This is off topic.
Please.
But,
and that's what we do.
Like, I think it's the story structure. Because it doesn't have a major climax. Like, that whole end where they finally catch up. Like, the snake thing is the real climax. The snake pit, but before that, where they've got the whole thing, it just doesn't.
It just happens.
Right, it's so boring. Like, I don't even. Maybe not. It's not uninteresting. It's just not exciting in the way that they show it.
It's again, and I think this is sort of it's what the Coens do, and it's also sort of representative, I think, of like the new school of Western is like, we're taking the white hat hero with this exciting, you know, build to this giant climax, and we're going to just show things just happen, you know?
Right.
And what does that mean? What does it mean to go set out to murder a man?
Maybe, you know, de-glorify it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. It's to mystify, but to take the myth, take this legendary aspect out of
right.
it. And it's still there, like Rooster Cogburn does some weird heroic stuff, you know what I mean? But he also, like, is a fat, drunken idiot. And you know, they sort of take the starch out of it, out of the hero of that. I'm not trying to defend the movie and bring you
over. No, I know.
I'm just saying, like, I think...
It's a valid. Their reasoning behind it, it's not just like they accidentally like messed up and they're like, oh, we don't have a climax for this.
Yeah,
it's
not out of poor storytelling.
Right. I'm kind of a stickler for like that three or four act story.
You know what you want it to be. And,
right.
And, yeah. And plus, you're not as big a Western person as I am. So
it's true. I do really like the first half of that movie is really entertaining to me.
Right. Before they get into the real Western stuff, where it's right. more talky. No, I'm. It's
yeah.
Like that's
or
what
with
you,
the shopkeeper.
That's
all
what
that.
You watch a Coen Brothers movie for. Is, yeah. Is the dialogue and the fun characters. You
mm-hmm.
know.
Now we get to what is the worst movie we saw.
I'm gonna just throw it out there. The Old Guard was probably the thing I enjoyed the least.
I get it.
Yeah, I mean, that probably was just, I think it's not even necessarily a bad movie. It's just so unexceptional and so mm-hmm. kind of by the numbers and boring. That right. it just didn't do anything for me. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things where I'm not trying to trash talk the movie. I know I came down a lot harder on it than I did. We got mail over that one. You know,
we
got a couple like people would reach out and be like, it's not that bad. And it's I probably came down a little bit hard on it. It's just a really unexceptional movie mm-hmm. that I just at the end of the day, if you said, do you want to watch this again? I'd be like, no, not really. I'd watch something else.
I am a defender of that movie, and I did like
it.
Fine. And I'm going to watch if they make a sequel. I am going to watch it. But I saw an article that was like, The Old Guard revolutionized superhero movies. And I was like, okay. First off,
yeah,
no.
That seems a bit hyperbolic.
I get that it's the only superhero movie we've had this year, but I don't think it was anything brand new.
I think there were kind of think pieces about, like, this showed that you don't need a $1 billion budget to make a superhero movie.
Right.
This kind of idea of, like, hey, straight-to-Netflix superhero movies could be a thing.
I mean, now Wonder Woman is going to HBO.
Right, but that also had a big Warner Brothers budget behind it. That was supposed to be a theatrical release.
Right.
The idea of making... Netflix is essentially, like, made-for-TV movies. They're mm-hmm. not terribly... I don't think they're terribly higher in quality and budget than, I don't want to say like a Hallmark movie, but like a TNT or some sort of like FX mm-hmm. production, you know, like this basic cable kind of.
Right. But you get some cool stuff with that.
I'm not knocking. I think Netflix has made some really interesting things.
They basically give everyone the same amount of money and they're like, go do something cool with it.
Right. But yeah, I mean, in this year, we're seeing so much stuff is going to go straight to like HBO Max. But these were like big theatrical budget movies. Mm-hmm. The idea that, hey, look what Netflix did with a little bit of money thrown at this small studio and a small director and a kind of an indie comic book title. And they made a superhero movie that people did respond mm-hmm. to it.
I found out later that is the first superhero movie to be directed by a black woman.
Oh, really?
And like, yeah, I was like, they didn't even advertise that or anything. Oh, like,
I wish it had been a good one then. Netflix did superhero stuff with the Marvel universe, you know, Luke Cage and things like that of similar quality. Some of it was better. You know, there were seasons of Daredevil or episodes
of Daredevil. I
think
Jessica Jones was the first season. The
first season of Jessica Jones was pretty good.
David Tennant really saves it.
It's true. After that, so much stuff was hit and miss. And I would say the first season of Luke Cage was really good. And they kind of lost me after that, too.
I don't know. I never finished it. Really? I watched the beginning of it. I didn't get to the
end. I think it went
end.
A little bit long. But yeah, there was... I liked Luke Cage. I thought it was cool, and there was like cool Wu-Tang music in it and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Netflix, I think, is showing people like you don't need this crazy budget to make some decent stuff. And
I think that's a good...
I think it shows the potential. Like, The Old Guard was not necessarily for me, but I think it shows that potentially they could make a superhero movie of great quality.
Right.
Without a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Us? What was the bottom of your barrel? And doesn't you don't necessarily have to be like, I hate the, you know, you don't have to dig for something you hate, but you probably have something anyway.
I'm going to put my shields up.
I know what's coming.
It's Haywire.
Oh, no, I don't.
No?
I thought you were going to pick Fight Club.
We're going to talk about that in a second.
Okay.
No, Haywire, I just found it boring. It didn't hit me right. You know, I see the value in it. It's got an interesting premise.
I'm coming over the table. It's kind of cool.
I like the aesthetic in parts. It's kind of a snooze fest.
Okay. I'm not going to fight you on it. Like, okay. Honestly, like, it's not for everybody. If you go in expecting a Bourne movie, you're going to get that, but only at certain parts.
Mm-hmm.
If you go in expecting it to be one of those British like spy dramas, you're going to get that, but it's going to be interrupted by brutal fighting. Like
right.
This movie, I think there's a very, very select audience for it. Like I think it's kind of an independent film by a big director. Mm-hmm. It's not for everybody.
Well, that's what happens when you like mash up genres. You get like, you kind of alienate some people who like this, people who like that, but then you create this new audience. And I think that's cool. I just don't fit into the audience for Haywire.
It's all subjective and it's totally fair. I really enjoyed Haywire. It didn't make like my top movies, but I'm glad that I revisited it. I really enjoyed it and reminded me how much I like that movie. I know that you didn't enjoy it that much.
One thing I will say is the actress, I don't know her name.
Gina Carano?
Yeah, right. Yep. She's in The Mandalorian.
Right.
I wish they kept the dub of
the dub Laura actress. San Giacomo, I think.
Yeah, she needs to do the Mandalorian stuff too, because like she has such a good voice. And
she does have a good voice, and
Gina is not the best actress.
Gina Carano she's about what you'd expect from an athlete turned actor. Not very many of them really are great actors.
She's the female Rock.
I think you're dragging the Rock down a peg, but
the
Rock is fine, but he's I'd almost give the edge to like a wrestler, because a wrestler is acting more than a MMA fighter who is actually like competing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's a performance aspect
in wrestling. It's it's theatrical.
And, yeah.
Not to turn this into who would win, The Rock or Gina Carano, but like
Gina
Carano is not a, she's not an actor. I think she's fine in The Mandalorian. I've only seen season one. I liked her in that. She was only in a few episodes, and I thought for what she was given to do in that,
yeah,
I thought she was really good for, I mean, it's sort of a pulpy samurai Western story anyway. It's not to be taken. It's not high art. It's not theatrical.
How dare you?
It is.
With the amount of Star Wars stuff in this room we're in right now.
Like, it's the level. I think she fits into what she's given to do there very well.
I get it.
I still need to see season two. And I am going to watch it. I'm not a Mandalorian hater.
I'm aware.
Yeah. But I thought she was one of the better things about The Mandalorian season one.
She was pretty good in season one.
I really kind of enjoyed, oh, here's this cool character who is like a shock trooper, mm-hmm. and
she honestly does way less in season two.
Yeah, maybe that's better.
Maybe, yeah. There's like a few scenes they've given her like an arc, but it's like very background, like
right.
Two scenes.
Is it one of those things where they were like, yeah, she's not gonna be in much. And then they found out, like, fans liked her, and they're like, ooh, we have to build. It's sort of a, like, right, an add-on arc.
Well,
to...
fans actually don't like her, because she said some transphobic
stuff.
No,
not her, but her character. I think people respond to her character. Oh, yeah, her
character's cool, yeah. She apparently is from Alderaan. She's a survivor. They have a weird scene about it. But yeah, anyway, let's talk about Spoiler Fight Alert. Club.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I've changed my stance.
Is this in, are we still in the least favorite movies?
No, because you mentioned it. My opinion has changed. Okay. So I wanted to bring that up.
Please.
It changed. that's it.
Okay.
No.
So it's your favorite movie now?
It's not.
Oh.
But I do like it more.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't even rewatched it. It's just like the more it's been in my head. Yeah. I'm going to have to rewatch it soon, but...
Are you?
I...
Are you being assigned it?
No.
Oh.
I'm just... We should start every season of our show off
with a rewatch of Fight Club?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it. I'm down.
Honestly, I don't have much to say about it. I just, like, I was overly negative for no real reason.
I think,
like, it kind of caught me off guard, and then...
I think you just had a reaction to an uber-violent, kind of ugly movie.
Right. Like, that's not my kind of thing.
No, I'm not blaming you for your reaction to that.
But the message is good. And the acting is good, and the twist is good.
Right.
So, yeah, I might want to revisit it.
Well, the twist of that movie is one of those things where it's like, that's the thing that you think the movie is all about the first time you watch it. And then when you do rewatch it, it is like, oh, it's not really about the twist. It's about all this other stuff. It's about how easy it is to take a good idea too far. And, you know, like, how fast things can spin out of control.
Right.
I'm glad to hear
it's about abuse and toxic people and terrible, masculinity.
It is a lot about toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. Terrible relationships that are built on terrible things.
I actually saw something about how the author of Fight Club... he came up with the idea for it by... He was working at an office or something. I don't really know.
He was like just a office drone. Yeah.
And he came in one day with, like, a bruised up face. I don't even remember the story of what happened. But, like, he realized, like, people will not address it. Like, violence is just kind of this thing. And so then that kind of inspires the scenes where, like, he's... beaten up
in
and
all smashed up, and people are pretending not to notice, and that's really interesting. I always wonder, like, because Fight Club is one of those movies that I feel like is constantly misunderstood, and it's championed by the wrong people who don't get the message of it, who think Tyler Durden is correct in his in his actions, and it is one of those things. I always wonder, like, does Chuck Palahniuk, I always pronounce it wrong, the author of Fight Club, I always wonder if he sort of is like, oh, God. You know, these people constantly emailing me who missed the point. You know, like, it's, there's so much of it that is misinterpreted, I feel like. And I think it becomes misinterpreted by other people, too, who aren't championing those things.
Who think
that's what
the
movie is.
Right.
And it really is. A couple weeks ago, you and I had a conversation about, like, you know, if you could ban a book from existence, you know. And a lot of these books that people call out, it is about, like, people, there's a toxic fandom around this. And I think a lot of those things are, that's not the book's fault or the author's fault. There is a toxic community around Fight Club of people who don't understand Fight Club, who are enormous fans of it. but don't understand what it's really about. And I think there's a lot of those things.
I will say, though, interesting question. I don't know where I stand on this. Do you think that's a fault of a story if people are misinterpreting it that badly and supporting the opposite of the message?
I don't think
you haven't gotten your message across, or is that just like a basic media comprehension failure?
I think it is a fault of the consumer. I don't think the message of Fight Club is hidden anywhere. I don't think that the meaning of Fight Club is so coded and hidden that it takes a lot of work to break it down. I think toxic people approach that with whatever baggage they have, and that's what they pull from it. You know, yeah. And that's not anybody's fault except that person. You as an artist, as an author, you can create whatever you want, and people are going to have their takeaway, and you have no control over that.
True.
And people, I feel bad for authors whose works are basically hijacked from them. Because it's like, they didn't set out to, you know, to throw this thing into, you know, the alt-right to pick this up, or some sort of neo-Nazi hate group. I'm trying to think of an example right now.
It's like Anakin turning to the dark side. It's like, no!
Sure, I mean, like, it's not their fault that people don't think critically enough to interpret art as intended.
Right.
And no, I know what you're saying. We can talk about 2001 and how it's not all in the movie. It's partially in the book. And that's a failure of the movie to communicate the entire meaning. But yes. Something like Fight Club, something like Breaking Bad, something like, I don't know, what?
Clockwork Orange.
Yes. These things that are about anarchists that are not pro-anarchy, you know?
Yeah.
And people take them and take the wrong things from them. And that's really not... I mean...
I do think there is,
that happens, though, with good art, I think, a lot of times.
Right. There is this thing, though, of like, we're taught, okay, the main character is the good guy. This is who we're rooting for. And so I think it is sometimes just, like, a thing of people don't understand, like, they're just stuck in that mindset of, oh, it's always the main character's the good guy, even when they're doing something so obviously bad.
Sure. I think, again, that's a lack of critical thinking and just going, well, this is what a story is. And, you know,
right.
I'm sorry. Like, that's, I mean, we as an internet culture didn't have any problem taking something like The Giving Tree and deconstructing that and going, this is about a terrible toxic relationship. Whether that's what Shel Silverstein meant or not.
Is it not about that?
We put our critical thinking, it's about selfless giving is what I interpret Shel Silverstein's meaning to be. But it plays out like, yes, this is selfless giving, getting nothing in return.
I've always thought about it as...
It was a
this is
beloved a... children's story when I grew up, and everybody was just like, what a great tree. It just this is what nature does, is it just gives. And don't we appreciate it? But this is what I'm saying is, like, we don't have any problem applying our critical thinking to that and a new lens and life experience and going, oh, this is about... so much more than that. This is about how little respect we actually have for nature, and that this is we are in a toxic relationship with nature.
I love The Giving Tree, and I've always interpreted it as a cautionary tale of you shouldn't do this to the people in your lives.
I think that's a generational thing.
Because look at how this old man, now he just has a stump, and he says, I'm sorry, and like...
He has a stump, and that's exactly what he needs.
Right, yeah. But the tree doesn't have what it needs.
Exactly.
And
right, yeah.
So, no, yeah.
Now we see it as a one-sided relationship. I don't know. I never put that together until I went and re-looked at that when you guys were little, and I had cracked the book for the first time in forever.
I thought it was a beautiful message, though, of like, hey, kids, remember when you're getting something, you're taking it from someone else.
Sure.
And you need to be aware of that.
It is that. I'm not knocking Shel Silverstein for that message.
Right.
I'm saying... what we used to take at face value, we pull out our critical thinking skills to look at it in a new way and go, oh, this is about so much more than that. And I say, if we can all do that to something simple like a children's book, everybody should be able to do that with any piece of art that they are given. And their failing to do that is not a fault of the author. Mm-hmm. That is a fault of the consumer.
I agree. You know, there's this weird internet joke about, like, oh, English teachers are always trying to find the hidden meaning when authors didn't put it. And it's like, most of the time their examples are like, no, that is definitely,
right,
that is a very obvious hidden meaning. Right. Like, it's called a metaphor. It's called using, like,
symbolism,
interacting with the text. Sure. Like, that is what English is supposed to teach you.
Right. It's not just about reading something and doing a book report.
Right. You know, like, and I think a lot of people fail to learn how to do that. And I think it's sad.
I think it's... we're in total agreement on this. I think we just sometimes come at it from two different ways of saying, well, whose fault is it? You're right. You're not wrong in saying, what if it's not clear? Because that is the author's job, is to, you know, put the meaning in there so it can be found.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, like, yeah, I think most times, most things that are misinterpreted, you know, end up, it is just a, it's a failing of the reader.
Right.
Or a misunderstanding. And I think Fight Club, to bring it back to where we started from, I think Fight Club is a prime example of that. It is just, it is exhausting to, I don't, you know, read a lot about Fight Club or watch videos or things that break it down, because it is, I think, one of the most largely misinterpreted works of, like, the last 20 or 30 years.
Which is bizarre, because the message is
it's right
overt.
There. Yes.
My main problem with the message when I first watched it was just, like, I don't think it went far enough, or even just, like, it's a very graphic way to show it, and I don't always like watching graphic stuff, but, like, I really don't know how someone could watch that and be like, I want to get beat up.
No, yeah.
I want to be Brad Pitt in this.
I want to blow up skyscrapers, and, you know, like, this idea of leading a death cult is, and somehow that's winning. It is, like, I mean, we're just talking before we started recording about, like, the misinterpretation of Breaking Bad. Like, there are people who watch Breaking Bad and think, yeah, Walter won. It's like, what point did you stop watching? Because that is not...
I watched the pilot. What an easy way to make money.
Wow, we really cashed in. Yeah, so that's your changed opinion.
That is.
That's a good one. That's a surprising one.
Yeah, it was also the first thing we watched, so, you know, I've had more time to process it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's,
Have you, like, you don't have to, like, it could just, no, but, like, do you have an opinion that's changed or developed in some way?
Like I said, most of the stuff I had seen before, the things I didn't like were something like The Old Guard. I maintain that I did like this movie, but, like, Jojo Rabbit didn't quite click with me, and I haven't revisited that.
We're going to change that opinion one day.
I like Jojo Rabbit.
I
really cannot stress enough that I do like that movie.
It
didn't
live
with me in the same way that, like, you love that movie. And it didn't click with me quite the same way. But there especially elements of that movie, I still, like, when I think about the Scarlett Johansson arc of her... Not just her end, but her loving her son and being so afraid of what he was turning into. That, you know, that gets more heartbreaking to me the more I think about that.
Right.
Because that is just such a terrible scenario when you feel like you're losing your kid to hate. I can't even imagine what that's like.
And it might be like when you lost me to musical theater there for a while.
I know. It was really, really rough. Every time you waved at me, it was jazz hands. But that
exit stage left.
The Hunt, like I say, the more I sit with The Hunt, the more I find that a very interesting movie, and I do want to revisit that again sometime. But no, I think most of my opinions were opinions I had coming in with stuff that I had seen already. Mm-hmm. And that's a failing of me bringing so much, not a failing, but like you brought a more introductory effect. Stuff as opposed to me bringing in things that I was already familiar with.
Yeah. And I think that's fine.
I think it's fine too, but I think next season I do want to bring in probably just some things that I've been meaning to see that I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, some foreign stuff. I do have, there's at least one Hong Kong, probably two Hong Kong movies that I want to bring in that I have seen and that I love and that I want to share with you, but... You know, right. Also some things like Amy Frost has brought up, Amelie, things like that have been on my list forever, these foreign movies that I just have not made time for. Miyazaki movies, things like that are all brand new to me. That
right, Studio Ghibli, that's yeah, another one.
That's Miyazaki stuff, oh. Yeah. But
I was like, oh, I have a new one.
Stuff like that is stuff I want to bring in and take a look at.
For next season, I've mentioned it before. I have this poster.
Yeah.
It's 100 movies must see. And you know, it's just someone's opinion, but a lot of them I haven't seen. I think like I've marked off close to 30 or maybe 40. And there are a bunch I haven't seen, so I feel like that's a good jumping off point. So I'm going to try to do more of those, and just like if I get stuck and can't think of something on one of our weeks, I'll just be like, okay, that one.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly, mm-hmm. I mean, that's like a carved out list for you.
Right.
You know what
Someone
I mean?
Did the work. I don't even need to show up to the podcast.
It's like, hey, I'm going to call whoever made this poster to call in and sit in for me.
Yeah. One more thing, this wasn't on our list to talk about, but I wanted to talk about how, I've gotten better at talking from this. Like,
yeah.
I'm stuttering a lot in this episode, but overall, like, I listened to the Fight Club episode today, and it's very different. I think I was more nervous, and...
I think we didn't even do notes on that one. We just turned on the mic and started talking. It's probably pretty sloppy. I haven't listened to it.
Start with season two next time.
There was a point a couple years ago where I listened to the first podcast I was ever on, and I don't think I made it 5 minutes in. I'm like, this is awful. This is just the worst.
But that's a thing about... learning and growing and
getting used to,
yeah,
you know. I've been podcasting for 3 or 4 years now, and I taught for a few years and did school visits as an artist. Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff has worked together. People are going to listen to this and go, this is better, but I am so much better at speaking and speaking clearly. I know I have a long way to go. I know I don't have a radio voice, but yes, this does improve communication skills. I think I've been in podcasting groups where this has been brought up, and it really is true. I think, mm-hmm. you know, if you make a point of going and speaking in some format publicly every week, you are going to get better at it. And you are so much better at this than you were in July when we started.
Right.
You're better at speaking into the mic and projecting your voice and a lot of theater stuff probably mm-hmm. coming
and,
back around.
And also figuring out how to say my opinion, how to enunciate.
Right, how to articulate your...
That's
your,
the word I was thinking of.
Look at you, getting better and better. You're so close.
It's on the tip of my...
nose.
Tongue. That's it.
All right.
But... you know, I took a semester-long public speaking class, and these 20 episodes have done so much more for my public speaking than those ever did.
Well, I'm glad. I will be charging you
per
credit hour. Let's see. I'll get my billing office.
Let's charge the listeners.
Yes. All right, guys. You just took a correspondence course in
the master class. Yes. Should teach it.
Well, good. I'm glad you got something out of this.
Yeah.
And you saw a bunch of cool movies.
Mm-hmm. I had to talk to you. That's kind of the downside, though.
Well, that's the downside for most people who end up having to talk to me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
You got anything else about stuff we watched? Any just general thoughts or final thoughts about anything?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'm proud of what we've done. We've done 20 episodes. Nice even number.
Yeah.
A few bonus.
We had two bonus. We had we did the banned books. I'm very proud of the banned books episode.
It is a good episode.
My sister Amy was on. Amazing screw on head, you know. We had a great Halloween month, mm-hmm. and
we're gonna be doing more of those next year.
Yeah, we're definitely hitting Halloween up again next year.
Right.
But yeah, I'm gonna plan out our schedule for we'll probably do 20 episode seasons.
Okay.
And just keep it right around there. And yeah. So we'll probably get two seasons in next year if all goes well.
Fun.
With a little break in between. But yeah, this has been a good season.
It has.
Should we call it?
I guess so. Also, sneak peek of next season. It's going to be only sequels. So get ready for it.
You are lying.
Everyone knows sequels are better.
It's going to be son of movies. We're going to be like son of Kong, son of Godzilla, son yes. of... boy, I don't know what else. I feel like every monster movie had a son of Frankenstein.
Bride of Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
Oh. Something to think about.
Something to think about, indeed. Let's close this out. Good season, Oz.
Yeah, I liked it.
Let's do some shout-outs.
Okay. Do you want to go first?
I will go first. I want to shout out an artist I know, Michael Mims. This is at Mims 28 Studio. That's the numbers 28. Mike is a scratchboard artist, which means he takes a paper covered in India ink and he scratches away the ink and makes the image.
Ooh.
It's like a white image. He does the. It's almost working in reverse.
That's of traditional ways. Sgraffito in clay. They take a clay of one color and then they cover the whole like pot in another color and then you scratch away.
Scratch it away. Okay,
yeah, it's really cool.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, Mike's great. He does movie scenes. He does athletes. He draws. Comic characters.
So like pop culture kind
of
stuff?
A lot of pop culture stuff. I'll have the link to his website in our show notes. You can also follow him at Mims28 Studio on Instagram. I have a piece of Mike's. He has Andy Kaufman as a wrestler. it's just great. He does amazing work and If you are into discovering new artists, Mike's a great one to follow because he's super talented. He's super skilled at what he does. And that medium that he does, it blows my mind I can't even figure out. I can't even fathom how he does it. But it's really cool to see the end result. Mike's a great guy and a great follow. So give him a look.
That's awesome. Honestly, my favorite thing about social media is like not just finding new artists, like that's great in itself, but like finding people who do like totally different, like I've never heard of this.
Yes.
Or it's like their own thing, like they created this.
Yeah, same. I trash talk social media a lot. I legitimately love Instagram because it is visual. And it's an artist's social media. I follow. I have discovered so many artists. I know they're owned by Facebook. They mine my data just like Facebook does. They're a giant pain in the ass, but they showcase artists so well. It's such an easy place for me to find and follow new artists.
It's what DeviantArt wanted to be.
Exactly. Oh, God. I'm so glad I left DeviantArt. I tried to hang.
What a horrible format.
That was the place for artists to be for a long time, though. You know right. what I mean? Like, it was
there was no better
media
place
for visual arts. But yeah, give Michael Mims a follow on there and really just tell him how great his work is if you enjoy it.
Right.
Oss, what do you got?
My shout out this week is a very strange one. Ratatouille the Musical, which is not a real musical. It doesn't exist. It's basically a collaboration between a bunch of TikTok musicians. And it's gone past musicians now, but it started as someone... I guess I should start off by explaining that my generation loves the movie Ratatouille.
Still don't get it, but whatever.
It's a great movie. So someone just wrote a fan song about the movie, and it turned into someone being like, oh, we should write this song for this scene in the movie. And then soon enough, tons of people had written songs. And it's like the weirdest collaboration of artists I've ever seen. And it's like we have people designing sets, and it's very weird. The only thing is there are so many TikToks about it, like it's hard to organize. But funny enough, Playbill, like the official Playbill site for Broadway, made Ratatouille the Musical. They put songs in order.
They curated the list.
They did. And there's links to every TikTok or YouTube or wherever the song is. It's really interesting. You know, they haven't had a lot to do on Broadway being shut down, right. But... yeah, I just thought it was so interesting because a bunch of people with no planning or forethought created an interesting fan fiction that kind of works.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun.
I guess that's social media being useful. Is that useful? I'll call it useful.
It's productive.
What's the site that curated it?
Playbill. Yeah, there's going to be a link.
I gotta talk to them about Fight Club the Musical. I'm trying to get it off the ground.
They make every movie into a musical now.
That's right. All right, dear listeners, Austin and I want to go out saying thank you. We cannot thank you enough for the praise, support, and feedback we have gotten from you since the beginning of this show, this season. Seriously, you guys, we did this just for ourselves, and... didn't know that anybody would care, but we've gotten some great feedback, and we really, really appreciate you following along with us and letting us know that you are listening and enjoying
right.
it.
I think just like talking to people on Twitter and like, yeah. it's very fun. I have more people to talk to than just my dad. God, he sucks.
Well, all right then.
And don't forget, we will be back for season 2 starting in January.
In January, yep.
Until then, enjoy your break. We will enjoy ours. We won't have to work for this dumb podcast anymore.
Totally.
we probably will be watching movies, though.
I'm sure of it.
Yeah. And most importantly, stay safe, be reasonable, and keep your gatherings small if you're going to have them this holiday season.
Yes. Keep your family safe. Stay healthy, stay happy. Let's move into 2021 and better days ahead.
Let's hope.
You want to throw your social media out?
Yeah, haven't done this in a while.
I know. I'm all over the map here with my notes.
I'm Austin N. Rude and sometimes Austin.N.Rude on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter.
I am philrude.com, at philrude on Twitter, at philrude75 on Instagram. Austin, you want to read the credits?
Yep. We did everything ourselves.
There you have it. We'll see you next season on The Picture Show.
See ya. Oh, we should watch the Saved by the Bell reboot.
No.
No?
Nope. Not happening.